Okay, so today is the 17th of April and it's 2019, and we're in Tracy Rowledge's studio in West London, and I'm Linda Sandino, and sitting with me is David Clark and Tracy Rowledge. So this recording really is a conversation about how Room, which you showed at Collect this year, and how that came about. So would one of you like to start telling us about that?
Okay. This piece of work really came about after having done the collaborative residency at Tunbridge Wells Museum and Art Gallery in 2016-17. Where it was multifaceted, the residency, but we responded to the collection there, or an aspect of the collection, and worked with, our raw material was bric-a-brac from the local charity shops, and as a result of that we made 9 bodies of work which we showed within the museum, library, Adult Education Centre and the Dogs Trust charity shop, which was just opposite the Adult Education Centre. And it was really important to us that we didn't show within the art gallery, we wanted to show within the fabric of the buildings where we'd done our residency. That was really important.
And why?
The art gallery was too neutral a space, I think, really. Also, we'd spent a lot of time within the museum and had really connected with, because it was really quite dated, the display cases and how the work was displayed there. We'd really started to engage with how work or objects are displayed within that context and how that affects how you read an object and its history and its value. And so we wanted to place our work within that context to kind of immediately engage with the nature of that kind of vocabulary. What do you think?
Yeah, and I also think within that residency we showed in the places where we worked, and we didn't do any work in the art gallery, and so it was we had a personal connection with the people in all the other venues. You know, the majority of the work came from the charity, we bought it from the charity shop, but our main engagement was with the museum, the library and the Adult Education Centre, and they were very different spaces with very different functions, and I think we were also quite interested in how the work could look in those spaces. And when we placed the work, it then became very interesting, those kind of associations of our work with the specific content of those spaces. And the collections actually fell into place quite easily, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
There was a kind of logic. I mean, it made sense that there were some connection points that just fitted really sweetly. So Lost Souls, which was a series of leather soles from the local cobbler, they went into the reference library, but the position that they took was actually above the maps of the area. So there was this sense of walking and mapping and tracing a kind of pathway of journeying through Tunbridge Wells, which we always did every day. We knew our pathway, and this kind of aspect of negotiation, and there were some sweet spots there that just felt really right, those kind of connections and references and counterpoints. I also think with the gazelles,
Limbo,
which was a series of stacked gazelles, they were in the portrait gallery, And this idea of, again, the rich people travelling and bringing mementos back, and the wooden gazelles were really a kind of token, almost like a souvenir of bringing back something from a country as a kind of tourist thing. But then that sort of exotic being within that space was really, really interesting, and how that set up a kind of quite pertinent communication between the portraits and this very strange object that was sitting right in the middle of the gallery was very strong, because we in the setting up, it was the only time that we saw the work in the location is when we set it up, which seems to be a perpetual thing that we keep on doing, is that the work is made off site and we only see it fully realised when it's on location, and that adds in a very different kind of flavour.
Before we sort of come back to that, could you say a bit about how you choose your objects?
Yes, that was what I was just wanting to go on to, that because what we alighted on within the residency when we were looking at the collection was three boxes of what are called unclaimed inquiries, which are, in a way, a lot of museums have them. It's their sort of guilty secret from the 50s, 60s, 70s, where people, the public, have offered objects that they've dug up in the garden or things that they've inherited or whatever to the museum, and for whatever reason they don't get acquisitioned, but they then also don't get given back to the people that have offered it, so they're objects that are in limbo. And it was these items that David and I became absolutely fascinated with, and so that's why we gravitated toward the charity shops and almost developed our own collection of unclaimed inquiries, so that we could work with these objects as raw material, as our raw material. So we weren't working with familiar materials from our own disciplines of bookbinding and silversmithing. We were working with ceramics and glass, and we were really working with objects that were really in a complete state of limbo, because they had they were no longer in fashion, and they were sort of hideous in each in their own way. And we took on this residency because we wanted to be challenged, and this was part of the process for us, was to see if we could work with these objects as raw material to create work where it would go back into the context of, or would be put into the context of a museum, and people would look at these, this new body of work, with completely sort of fresh eyes, and it would be given the status that it had completely sort of lost for whatever reason. Which, I don't know if status is the right word, but
well, you've talked about giving things a new life.
I mean, there was also a kind of rule that kind of emerged when we were in the charity shops, which was, if something was aesthetically very, very difficult and one of us would say no, it would then become a yes. So it wasn't, we weren't going in picking up stuff that we liked. It was actually, if I was like, Tracy, this is absolutely disgusting, it was then bought. And so then there was a kind of struggle with how to deal with, or how to approach, or whether we could. And actually, by the end of the residency, we had our own box of unclaimed inquiries, which were pieces that we could do nothing with, or well, either the time ran out, or they just didn't become relevant, or that kind of series just dropped off. But we gave our unclaimed inquiries back to the charity shop to sell it. So they had the original prices on, but it was like we didn't want to carry our unclaimed inquiries out from the residency, so we got rid of that baggage. But I think it was really important that we had to struggle with something. You know, it wasn't like an easy selection or an easy ride. It was really, I mean, some of the pieces were so disgusting. I mean, horrid. Well, there was the teapot, which was like the crown jewels. It was ceramic, red, green and gold, which was a crown, orb and scepter, which was just It was also interesting because in that situation, the charity shop, you would find out that people's collections were going to charity shops. So in that day, that charity shop probably had six teapots, and they're kind of novelty teapots. But you knew that someone had died, or there'd been a house that had been cleared out, or someone's actual collection had ended up in a charity shop, which for us was really, really interesting. The last day we were in Tunbridge Wells, we went into one shop and it had probably, I don't know, 20 or 30 owls. And for me, that's interesting, collecting someone's collection and then doing something with that, which I think is something that we could do in the future. But there's, you know, what we collect and what we hold and where that goes. And I think out of the residency, it was also really interesting thinking about what objects are collected by museums, what's seen as quality or as iconic or important, and who makes those decisions. You know, what's the rationale by what is shown in museums? And one of the things that was really interesting was, you know, we were working between a museum and an adult education centre, and there's a very clear kind of hierarchy with quality and what's good or what's amateurish or what's DIY. And for us to take some objects out from the adult education centre and plant those in the museum, I think was really, really interesting about what's okay, what's not okay, what are the levels of thinking or predictability or kind of the fashionable stuff that should go into a museum or not, and who makes those decisions, and what are those based on, I think is really, really interesting.
So this land of gentry, we can talk about that for a minute.
Yeah.
Is that the work that you've, that maybe brings those two worlds together?
Yeah, I mean, there was the paint pots, which was an absolute joy, because we would work, so our working days in Tunbridge Wells were mainly placed in the adult education centre, but we never had a fixed room. So we would move, we would have to unpack, every time we arrived, we would unpack our collection of objects to respond and react and do something with, or reject, or do whatever. But we were in the painting studios up in the top floor, which are beautiful. And we were moving stuff around, and then we saw the paint pots on the by the sink. And it's the paint pots that the painters were cleaning their brushes with. And they were all upside down because they were drying, but for us they were absolutely just extraordinary objects.
Ready-made plinths. And also for David, you know, only working with grey, I think it was a really important thing to introduce colour into our collective palette. So that was there in the paint pots, and also that they were all different shapes and sizes, as were the pewter cast figurines that we then put on these pedestals.
And they found their own, it was interesting because they found their own homes. So, you know, each figurine has its own jar, but they all seem to locate very, very nicely on the jar that kind of suits or fits. They find their kind of location. And it's like, who's highest, who's low? Does everyone get a plinth? There are two that don't have a plinth. One because of scale, one because, I don't know, it just didn't. And he's quite a sad character. And there's interesting that kind of, again, those relationships that you get within a crowd scene of, you know, multiple people. There's a lot of different communications going on with that piece, with kind of posture and position, and then the dynamic that you can set up with whether they're looking at each other or backs to each other or what's going on. And they all look really quite damaged as well. You know, there's not the perfect. That's gone, which was in the ceramic. You know, they were exquisite, you know, figurines. Well, I don't know if I would call them exquisite, but, you know, there's...
Of their type.
Yeah, of their type. Absolutely.
So, should we go over into the room now and perhaps pick up some of the sort of themes, you know, to do with space and movement, objects, and the the sort of giving objects new life, and how Wu was conceived, developing from shelved.
Room came directly from landed gentry and from greetings from Tunbridge Wells, and it really materialised, Room really materialised as an idea on a train journey, either to or from Tunbridge Wells, because they were incredibly productive, and we had the idea that really we would like to develop those two pieces of work together to make a room without walls. So it was taking forward the idea of how a group or a collection of objects are interpreted through the context of being within a museum, and how you read the objects and how you give them value. So by creating one piece of work, which would be the ceiling, and creating a coloured plinth, which the other element would sit on, the furniture is as much an integral part of the work as the pewter cast figurines that are sitting on the plinth. So every single element has the same, is as important really as the other.
I think it's important to say that between Tunbridge Wells and Collect there was the show at Soho, and that reimagining, reworking, re-showing was really extraordinary for both of us, and to come at work from a different angle because of the space, we put up another challenge, I think, for ourselves, which was not to bring anything into the gallery furniture wise. There was only one piece that came with the plinth, which was Limbo, but everything else with Felix was re-presented, and that was in negotiation with the space, the location, and also the relationship between the works. And I think that I keep on forgetting it, but there's something that I need to keep on reminding myself, that was a really important part of the journey between the residency and Collect. And there was one thing that Tracy said when we were talking in Gallery So, which was this idea of bringing the background to the foreground, and this idea of museum furniture, or the way that we present work, is very sort of soft focus. We ignore that. What the core ingredient is the objects or the things that we show, but actually how we show it or how we present and what that can do, I think, is really, really interesting. And so putting the furniture forward, I mean, we used very, very strong colour, which people responded to in very different ways, was really interesting for us, in just in just flipping a colour from a grey or a white to a much stronger, green or a blue. I think frames the way, and people have to navigate their way around that in a very, very particular way, or completely reject it. I mean, there was one person that was absolutely just horrified with the green.
At
Collect. Yeah. But for us, I think it was really important to just, we understand the context of Collect, we understand what goes on at Collect, we understand the kind of formats and the norms in which objects are shown, but there was something that came out of us really investigating display and what materials are used to show things or support or kind of shadow objects, I think is really, really interesting.
Yes, because I think that for me, what came, why Shelved and the exhibition of Shelved at Gallery So and then Room, is the way in which context of these different spaces, really almost reconfigure what the objects are about. Do they do that for you? I mean, do you, this is to do whether the object for you remains the same or whether it actually changes when it's shown in a different venue?
Yeah, for me,
I think it changes.
Yeah, completely.
And I think it's an opportunity for it to change also. I think we've it's been a very active process. You know, like David was saying, from shelved being in Tunbridge Wells to shelved being at Gallery So, we actively pursued that change, because, you know, to go from the context of, you know, a sort of a very dated museum, an adult ed and so on, to Gallery So, I mean, it's an about turn, and it was such an opportunity for us that we really kind of seized that moment, also to work with Felix in the way that we did curatorially. That was a really interesting process.
I mean, for us, the learning there, I think, is really important, because we could have attempted to replicate every display that we had in Tunbridge Wells into So, but what would be the point?
How could you?
Well, yeah, I mean, we could have borrowed furniture, we could have borrowed cases, we could have hacked a case off the wall and brought that to So, but it's like, what's the point? You know, that's not the point for us, because exposing our relationship to the work was really important, to do that on as many times as possible. And so to go into So and say, okay, so how could this look? And then our negotiation together, and then with Felix, was, it just reawakens new thinking about what that could do for us, the work and the audience. Again, it's a navigation through what that could trip up, or what that could, evoke. The audience is very different, the situation is very different, the lights, you know, everything is different, all the materials are different, and it's like, why would you doggedly stick to something that you know, when there's something to be challenged by? So we take the challenge every time. And I also think when we were in Collect, it's like, I spent a lot of time looking at how other people were showing work and how awful it is that it's not considered. You know, there's a format, and there's such a lack of rigour in how the work could be shown. And it's not invested in, well, it's not about investment, but it's like, there's not enough difference there.
Also, the work for Tunbridge Wells was site specific. So it would have been very disorientating for an audience to go to So without any reference, without the ready reference there. It would have been devoid of meaning. So we needed to engage with the vocabulary and language of a gallery context, to give it a meaning from a different perspective.
Can you give an example of, say, a particular way in which something was installed at Gallery So that shifted?
Yeah, I would go for Still Life, personally, which was up on the top floor, and that came out of a costume. Was it Victorian? No, it's not Victorian, it would have been 50s. It was a piece of museum furniture, a vitrine, tall, at least more than 6 foot, 7 foot, costume case, glazed, where we landed into the case, so we didn't take out the previous backdrop, but we placed our backdrop, which was thinner, but had the length. So you saw a bit of photography and some stuff behind. We didn't want to neutralise it completely, but acknowledge that something had existed there before. And then the pieces were on the floor, but it was on book cloth, which was the backdrop, and came onto the floor to the front of the case. And then when we came into Felix's, we reversed the whole, did we?
We, so what we did in the case in Tunbridge Wells was we added another layer.
Yeah.
We decided that we would keep, as David said, the photography on the back of the case, and we would keep the Hessian on the base of the case because that really rooted it in its time. And the backdrop that we added was bookbinding cloth in a very sort of deliberately neutral museum tone. And what sat in the bottom of the case were pewter, ready-made, began as ready-made pewter plinths, which were the basis for trophies, which I think ended up being the most labour-intensive work to be made, because in order for them to look ready-made, David had to do a huge amount of alterations. And then played around with what would you call it? Not discoloration, the
patination.
The patination of them. And I then tooled, using bookbinding, gold tooling technique, the shadow of each plinth. So it was incredibly quiet landscape, so that they would, this piece of work, still life, would sit within the museum, but really just talk about display and a place for contemplation of the work that was around this piece of work. When we got to Gallery So, we assumed that it would be almost a replication of this, but attached to the bare brick wall that would then, so the book cloth would be attached to the brick wall and then come down, and the plinths would just sit on the base, on a raised base. And then we realised that actually we'd been really rather sloppy and very lazy in that thinking, and that it needed to be taken much further, because really we couldn't, it wasn't enough to just replicate what we'd done at Tunbridge Wells but not have it in the case. So we did a complete sort of about turn and decided that in fact the book cloth needed to be entirely horizontal on a raised base. And although that seems like a very small decision to make, it was gargantuan, wasn't it?
Mm.
And I think because with each piece of work, we thought we'd taken it to another level. And then when we got to Gallery So, as usual, with our way of working, there was a huge amount more to do on site for it to be it.
So, thinking about room now, and it's really interesting to hear what you've just said about the sort of reconfiguring of work for spaces. Room, in a way, enabled you to conceive of your own conditions for a work and its space. So could you talk us through how you conceived of that? Because if I could just say that, because I wrote the essay before I saw
your
work, so I hadn't imagined that it was going to be one plinth. I thought it was going to be two. So anyway, because one of the things is that you inevitably, because of that project space and collect, you don't have control of your space.
No.
Could you sort of say a bit about, your decisions about how to conceive of, how to sort of stake your claim through that piece?
I think room for me felt like such a unit, an entity in its own right, that I never felt concerned that it wouldn't stand its ground within that context, because it was so sort of distinctly itself, and I think regardless of what was around it, it would always be in the foreground, and everything else would just slip into the background. And I think because essentially every element was in the foreground, and it was really all about creating an environment where you could be in a space and really start to absorb every element of it collectively and individually, that the light coming through the punched postcards would create a particular atmosphere within that space. I felt was incredibly important, that we were creating our own kind of microclimate.
And was that a consideration from the beginning, or was that something that sort of evolved in the discussions you had sort of on the train from Tunbridge Wells?
The original, I mean, Greetings from Tunbridge Wells was a wall piece. It was backlit, and there was something very, very magical about that light that came through it. And it didn't take long for us to kind of really consider, we wanted to go up in scale. Scale was really important to kind of be brave to take that step. And I think it didn't take long for us to consider that as a ceiling, and then what that could do, and what that could offer whatever was underneath it. And it built up from there, but also the last purchase that we made in Tunbridge Wells were the two monstrous figurines. So that was kind of another connection point, which just seemed to sit in place very, very well. It felt like the right continuation and the right way to go. And I think there was something about us then taking some control in the potential for the environment for those objects was really, really important. And I remember there was one meeting or one conversation where it's like, the back wall will be gingham, and I was like, good lord. And that original kind of horror of a Czech wall in that space, where we would have no, I mean, that's what you would be given. Oh, in the zoo of Collect Open.
That's, so, sorry, this wasn't somebody else's gingham wall.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So our neighbour, we found out that our neighbour would have a wall of gingham. And I was thinking, how on earth are we going to deal with that? But actually, as soon as we landed, it was like, it took its own space. It took its own place. And there was the relationship. I think there was something about, it wasn't just about the object, it was about the grounding of the object and then the framing of the object from above, which really set a kind of place for the audience. And in quieter situations, people really stood under the ceiling and I think took in a different experience from that presentation, which they didn't get from others, and I think that's what our intention was, that it was almost like a resting place within Collect, which is a commercial posh selling enterprise, and it was just about pausing for as long as you wanted. There's no rules to it, but it's like just to experience something slightly different.
And Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, I thought the title, its name was brilliant because it's both, you know, defining a space, but it's also giving room. Mm. I thought that was a really important element of the work.
I think both of those things are equally important and were equally important from the beginning.
Mm.
Yeah, I think. It was about creating a space where people could pause and have prolonged looking in a way that I think we're so used to speed reading now and quite often have half an eye on something else, you know, that's going on your phone or whatever. So it was how to just slow things down.
I think also there's something really important to refer back to the residency, which was 1 year, and that bought us space to work together for 1 year. And I think there are expectations about what the institution thought they would like us to respond to, but we made space for ourselves in the different spaces within those different institutions that we were working in to really find a spot for us and what that spot was, and that felt that it was beneficial for our development of working together. And I think by the time we got to Room, you know, within the collaboration at Tonbridge Wells, we were making separately, but actually with Room, every single piece that we made together, because it was either physically impossible or technically impossible, and that, you know, was a realization of one piece of work that came out of Shelved, which was housed, which were the boxes, where actually both of our disciplines really fused together in a way where it looked like one person was working. I mean, I still think we have issues with when the audience sees metal, they think I have made it. You know, when you say to them each figure is 8 kilos, well, that's impossible to cast that individually. And I think that's something that we will continually develop. But I do think this idea of how we make room for ourselves and each other within the way we work, but also the environment that we work in, is also really, really important. Because I think it's integral and actually into Room as well.
I think also between us we can explore the language of materials in a way, because I come at metal as an outsider and David comes at anything bookbinding related as an outsider, and and as well as the implicit trust that we have in each other, we can really push each other's boundaries. And I think that's where we're really interested in continuing to explore that particular area, I think.
And I think there's always a sort of third collaborator, which are the found objects that you use, because a bit like the postcards, you know, they were sent to people. You know, they're not just postcards.
No.
They're messages. Is that a fair sort of comment to make, that, you know, you engage in another dialogue with the materials and the objects?
I think so. I mean, I think even in the making of that, we probably read most of them while we were making it, and that kind of information and spotting stuff and looking at stamps, but also understanding, you know, the density of material. I mean, it was very interesting. It was a pain in the ass to make, but also understanding each other through that material was also really, really interesting, because to kind of get a regular indentation across two people.
Oh, for the punching.
Yeah, for the punching. Is something else. And we realised that both of us had to punch each cart you couldn't divide it up. Because my pressure is stronger than Tracy's, even if I go lighter.
Because on Greetings for Tunbridge Wells, the wall-based piece that we made for the residency exhibition, Shelved, I did all the punching for those postcards. So I then had to teach David, right, this is how you do it. And so David then started, but even with David's lightest pressure, he was still
heavier,
making bigger holes than I was. So then we had to create another system.
Yeah.
But I think going back to what you were saying about working with ready-made materials, as it were, I think it keys into our fascination with collections and groups, and how we instinctively, as humans, make groups and collections of things. So if you're putting things together on a shelf, you know, I don't know, if you've got a number of jugs, they will gravitate to be together.
Mm.
And we have worked with a ready-made collection of postcards of Europe. And I think that's very interesting. Also, that the objects that we use, that we have cast, match, if you like, because they're both figurines of a similar size. That, again, you could see as a collection.
And I like the way that they were placed as though they were in conversation with each other. I thought that was, you know, that again resonated with the sense of coming to the room to be, you know, to be together. You were mentioning earlier, having been to a talk by
Phyllida Barlow.
Yeah. It seemed that some of the things she was saying resonated with the way you approached your room, although it wasn't linked to that at the time. And I just wondered whether you could sort of say what struck you about what she was saying.
Yeah, what she said, which I found really interesting, was that although she doesn't see herself as making site-specific work, she responds to the physicality of a space. So within a museum context, she'll walk around the space and be really drawn to the floor and the ceiling, and just sees really that the walls create the boundary of the space, and that she tends not to work so much with the walls, because for her they define the authority of the institution. And I suddenly in that moment was thinking about room and how we had essentially created a room without walls, and the implications of that, of what she'd said on our work, was really, really fascinating, because that's so right. That it's in a way is without an authority figure. If you like, it's the viewer that's coming in and defining the meaning and context of the work. It's open. It's an open kind of it's open to anybody's interpretation. And I think a lot of people were quite thrown by it. Was it one piece of work, or were they separate units? And then we had the thing of who had made what, because people within, I think, an applied arts context feel that everything's so discipline specific, which is what we're not really interested in as a journey.
Hmm.
I think the walls thing, especially at the moment, you know, politically, is actually really important.
Hmm.
You know, I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned Phyllida Barlow seeing walls as authorities. You know, how actually they're not only that, but they're also ways to make divisions.
Yeah.
Which I think fits in with, you know, my seeing room as a dynamic space, not a static space. You mentioned somebody really objecting to the green of the plinth. Well, I don't call it a plinth. Would you call it a plinth? What would you call it?
I think out of laziness, probably would call it a plinth. But, you know, if you think about Phyllida, you could just see it as a base. That it's the ground on which...
I'd call it ground, if I would.
...domed figurines are sat on.
Mm. It was interesting, because the objection came from a curator. She was just like, this is just not... She's going, it's just green. And I'm like, yeah, it's green. You know, for me it's like, it's not even anything to really discuss. But she was just, I just think it's so not what it is supposed to be. And again, when you talk about divisions and you know, what are we doing and what are the predictable things? I'm also thinking that even the way that we placed ourselves, we had the opportunity to shift how we showed in the top gallery. And we were the only exhibit in Collect Open that was not parallel to the existing walls. So we were always off, just off. And I think there's something in the subtlety of that that's actually really, really important. It's not about, you know, smashing stuff up, but it's just having that subtlety for those that see it to get it. And it's not about, you know, slapping people and punching people. It's just... It's treading lightly where we go and how we do it, so it can be recognised for those that need to be just slightly tapped on the shoulder a bit. Because, you know, there are walls within disciplines, there are walls within, you know, there are walls everywhere, but it's like you can just tap on them a bit and just see whether some can drop down. And I think that's really important, and it's really interesting for us, because then it breaks down what materials we can use, and we can use whatever materials appropriate for whatever the job is or whatever the project is, and that becomes really, really exciting, because it just opens up new avenues for a lot of people of just saying, you might be trained like this, but actually your knowledge and your experience can go in many, many different directions.
But I think the spatial thing is something really important and productive that room has really enabled, I think.